Would you let your 9-year-old child ride the New York City subway alone? This mom, Lenore Scanese, did. People called her America's worst mom. Dr. Phil complained that she let her son ride the subway with
molesters, cyber stalking, predators, drugs, bullies.
People gave you grief.
Yes, they did.
Take the G train, then the J to Manhattan, 2 blocks up and one over. I know, Ma.
Law and Order even did this episode where that child riding alone is killed.
The construction site where he was recovered is where he was killed.
If I didn't think it was safe, I wouldn't have done it. But I really thought that my son was ready for it.
I lived to tell the tale.
He was ready. Years later, he told me,
I know how to get around. I'm confident in myself.
And he turned out okay.
He turned out fine.
Based on their experience, Scanese created Let Grow, a nonprofit that promotes childhood independence. Here's my full interview with her.
How do you know that not being allowed to wander is hurting kids?
The Journal of Pediatrics had an amazing piece. It was called The Decline in Children's Independence and Free Play and the Increase in Childhood Anxiety, Depression, and I would say passivity. And what was great is that the author says it's not just correlation, it's causation. As we've given kids less freedom, as we've trusted them with less freedom in their lives, less independence, less joy, what a surprise. They're becoming anxious and depressed, spiking off the charts over the last 10, 15, 20, I would say 40 years, according to that article in Pediatrics. The idea that we're keeping kids safer by not letting them do anything, by holding them tight, by not letting them walk, by not letting them play, by not letting them organize their own game of Foursquare in the park without us there saying, honey, why don't you go in the first square and your friend will go in the third square and then you can move. Without the kind of freedom that you and I had to organize our games, play outside, go places, and have fun, make things happen, kids are depressed. And there's a reason for that. There's something called the locus of control. And when your locus of control is internal, when you have a sense that, like, I can make things happen, I can deal with things, I'm going to be okay, confidence, you feel uplifted. You feel optimistic. It's the opposite of depression. But when you feel that someone else is in control of your life, if you're micromanaged at work, or if you're a kid driven every place and watched every single second, then it's an external locus of control. And when you have an external locus of control, you feel anxious, depressed, and you feel like a victim.
How do you know the cause is lack of freedom? Maybe it's that they spend all time in social media and that makes them depressed.
Well, I am going to keep referring to this article that was in the Journal of Pediatrics that found that the independence and free play were going down over the decades, even as anxiety and depression were going up. And that was going up before cell phones. It was going up before COVID. So it's a decades-long increase. I started Free Range Kids, which was the predecessor to Let Grow, in 2008. And I don't think the iPhone came out till about 2010 or 11. And I was already recognizing how unhappy kids were. And also I have to add how unhappy parents are. It's no fun to think that the second your kids go outside, they're going to be kidnapped or, you know, raped and eaten. And it's no fun to have to be with your kids every single second. I mean, the Surgeon General just came out with a big report on the misery of American parents. But it's miserable if you have to spend every second watching, supervising, entertaining, and educating a child when there's so much that you could be doing with your life and your friends, and they could be doing with their life and their friends. There used to be sort of two different worlds, actually three. There was the parents' world, which was really boring to kids. I remember my parents seemed to always be talking about either politics or who was having a procedure. And then there's the kids' world where kids would play, and it was boring to parents. You don't want to have to play Barbie with your kids. You don't want to have to be the doggy on the ground. It's kids' world. They're interested in what they're interested in, and you're interested in your life. And then there's family life at dinner or at a vacation or church or temple. And now it's all fused, and the kids are bored. And the parents are bored, and the parents have no free time, and the kids have no unsupervised freedom.
Talk about other countries. There was this Japanese TV program that
was popular. It's not just in Japan. So there's a TV show that's been running for 30 years in Japan, and there it's called My First Errand, and here it's called Old Enough. And it shows little kids age 3, 4, 5. I'll tell you, there were two episodes that stand out in my mind. One is a 5-year-old with her 3-year-old brother going to get the meat and the vegetables and the rice for sushi. And when the little girl starts out, her brother is crying his eyes out, and he's just so sad. And if this was America, we'd say, cut! You know, we're not going to do this. That's child abuse. That poor child, look, he's so sad. But the amazing thing is they didn't say cut. And so the kids go off, and pretty soon they have to go find the butcher, and they have to find the special kind of rice. And by the end, they both come back, and they're, you know, dragging their bags of sushi rice, and they are so proud and so happy. And there's sort of a laugh track and an awe track that goes along with this show, and you hear awe so much because your heart fills. You see that these kids did something on their own, and their reward is joy. And the parents' reward for not saying, oh, let's not make them do that, is joy.
They got a bunch of free time.
They got a bunch of free time. The parents got free time. The parents had somebody running an errand for them. It's my first errand. Who are they running it for? Their parent. Sometimes the kid is bringing something that the parent forgot to work. It's just so great. But another episode showed this little girl, 3 or 4 years old. She had to go get a cabbage. So she goes to this cabbage patch, not kids, actual patch. So she's trying to yank this cabbage from the ground. Cabbage has a root like this, a stem like this. And she's turning it like Ralph Cramden. It's like this giant wheel. And it's going on and on. The sun is going down. Finally.
Toreta!
The incredible determination, focus, patience, strength that she demonstrated because she was asked to do something that was hard and meaningful, it's a great moment. And why don't we let kids do that? We arrest the moms who let the kids walk outside for 4 blocks in suburbia.
Americans watch this show and love it, but they wouldn't let their kids do it.
Japan is a different country from America, duh. But one of the things they do that we have not embraced is that they trust their kids to be outside unsupervised with the assumption that everybody is going to watch out for them. So when kindergartners start walking to school, which they do, age 5, they wear these little hats. I'm not sure if they're always yellow, but sometimes they're yellow. And Americans think, so they're saying I'm predator bait? It's like, that's how we interpret it, maybe, or maybe you. But in fact, what it is showing the public is that this is a little kid. They might need help crossing the street. This is their first year in school. So everybody in that culture is A, used to seeing kids outside, and B, assumed to be a good-hearted person who will help them as opposed to calling 911 if they see a child outside.
There is less crime in Japan, so maybe it's appropriate that Americans are more worried.
There's less crime in Japan, but there's not more crime now than when I was growing up. And somehow, nobody called 911 on my mother when she let me, as a 5-year-old, walk to kindergarten. And I think what's happened, I keep trying to figure this thing out, but I feel like because back in the day, it was the norm to let your kid walk to school, and nobody was questioning it, and everyone was doing it. What happened is that all the parents got this trust muscle, right? They knew that it was okay to say goodbye to your kid at 9 and not see them again till 3, and then there was cookies and milk, and then you wouldn't see them again until 5. And so they got used to trusting their kid, trusting their neighbors, trusting their own parenting, that they'd been, you know, given the kids enough education and wisdom that they wouldn't be foolish. And without any separation from your kids ever, you don't have the evidence or the experience to know that they are going to be okay without you. That's why I have to say, Let Grow, the nonprofit that I run, that grew out of Free Range Kids, has a program that's free, everything's free, for schools, and it's called the Let Grow Experience. And what it is simply that teachers give the kids the homework assignment to go home and do something new on your own they haven't done before, with your parents' permission, but without your parents. Just so parents have the experience of saying goodbye, like my mom did to me, and watching the kid go off to the store, to the park, or if you're in a very dangerous neighborhood, go off to the kitchen and make pancakes without you there to turn on the stove. And the thing is that the kid feels so proud because they're trusted and because they're doing something new, and it's exciting, just like in the show Old Enough. But the parents are ecstatic, and I've been like mulling this for years. Why are parents so excited when all the kid did was went to the store, got a loaf of bread and came home. And I used to think it was because they were so happy that their kid wasn't kidnapped. I really thought, like, okay, that they thought that, and look, they weren't kidnapped. But then I started thinking, you have kids so that they will live on when you're not around. Let's just put it that way, right? It's seeing into the future. And until you let your kid do something without you, you don't know that they're ever going to be okay without you. So it is this ecstatic moment of realizing, like, hey, I had a kid and things are going to be all right. But now my third theory is that this is exposure therapy for parents. When you have anxiety about something, say it's a dog, okay? You're really scared of dogs. Exposure therapy is that the therapist says, well, today we're going to look at a picture of a dog. Ah! But then you get used to it. Okay, I can deal with a picture of a dog. Well, tomorrow we're going to go across, the dog is going to be across the street. And you're like, okay, you get a little used to it, right? And then now the dog is going to be on the same side of the street as you. Okay, and then the final day, the dog is in the room with you and you have to pet it. And you pet it and he licks you and you're like, oh, it's kind of a nice dog. And you realize, like, oh, by being exposed to the very thing you're afraid of, you come to be able to deal with it, sometimes even to like it. And parents have not been exposed to letting their kids go. Right? They think that if I let my kid out, something bad will happen, or I'm a bad parent, or I could never forgive myself. And so they need a push to let them go. And that's what the let grow experience does. The kid comes home with the homework. They have to go and do something. Okay. And then when the kid comes home, you are freed. It really is like therapy for the parent. It's like, I thought that was going to be impossible, and it was great. And I had a cup of coffee in peace, and my kid got the bread, and he's all happy, and I'm proud, and he knows that I trust him, and it's a great feeling. So I highly, highly recommend that schools go to Let Grow, click on schools, and consider doing the Let Grow experience, because it's free, and it changes the parents, and it changes the kids. Thinking about letting your kids do something always leads you back to the scary what if, what if, what if. White Vans, Liam Neeson.
They're going to take you.
But actually, action, letting kids go, rewires your brain. Independence is being studied as therapy for kids with a diagnosis of anxiety. And I think while it's working on the kids, it's working on the parents.
This trend in America that we have to protect our kids from everything. You think that's what led to this trend in universities where kids said that we have to be protected from bad words and certain clothing?
In 2017, Jonathan Haidt and Daniel Schuckman approached me to start a nonprofit. And they'd been talking to each other about what they were seeing on campus in the 20-teens, which was young people asking for trigger warnings and safe spaces in situations that were literally quite safe. Maybe a speaker was coming to campus that they didn't like, or a book dealt with a traumatic theme, a book that people had read for years and sometimes centuries. And so they were noticing that the kids were mistaking feeling uncomfortable for literally being unsafe. And that was disturbing to them. And Dan was saying to John, you know, as much as we're fighting for free speech on campus and to make kids more robust and open-minded, that's a late stage intervention by the time you're talking 18, 19, 20 year olds. Wouldn't it make sense to try to raise kids who were already resilient and curious and open-minded by the time they got to campus? And John said, well, you know, I know Lenore and I love free-range kids, so why don't we talk to her? And so they came to me and they said, let's start a nonprofit together that's going to try to make kids more resilient from the get-go. And I said, we can't just be thought leaders. We can't just be talking to people and having them nod along. Oh, yes, I loved my childhood. Oh, yes, that was so important to me. People agreed that there was something wrong with our culture and that kids were being coddled and they didn't want to be raising their kids this way. No parent wants to be a helicopter parent. They want to have the confidence in their kids and their community, but it's been sucked out of them by a culture that says children are being snatched off the street. One goes missing every 40 seconds. You know, any child who isn't in a after-school activity is wasting their brain. And so I said, we can't just change minds, we have to change behavior. Because once you change behavior, the behavior changes and the mind changes. So our behavior changes are sending kids home with the homework assignment to do something on their own so that parents have to let go, and that rewires the parent. And then we also want schools to stay open for free play after school. No devices, just a bunch of kids, some cardboard boxes, a ball, and a piece of chalk, and they have to figure out what to do, and they do. And that's how you get all this social emotional intelligence that we're so worried about, that there's worksheets and books and exercises in class teaching you how to read another person and empathize and be kind and breathe. And it's like, how about just sending them out to play? They're going to learn all that when they try to organize a basketball game, right? They have to make the teams. They have to decide if the ball was in or out. They have to, you know, deal with the person hogging the ball. So just keep the schools open for free play. We call it a Let Grow Play Club. And send kids home with the assignment they have to do something new on their own without their parents. And that's what we've been working on since 2017.
And yet you have grown-ups producing this cartoon, Stranger Danger.
Stranger Danger.
That actually points everyone in the wrong direction. When something rhymes, people believe it more. And that's why I came up with Worst First Thinking, which obviously has not quite made it to the level of Stranger Danger.
No.
But maybe it will.
But it's good. Worst first. That's how we think.
Right. We think that way, but it doesn't make sense.
People say safety first, but really it's achievement and exploration first. Safety may be third or fourth.
Also, what kind of safety are we talking about? I mean, if we're talking about this mental health crisis in kids, keeping them under lock and key, basically in a safe room all the time, doesn't seem to be so safe. The biggest threat to any child is somebody that they know, not a stranger. Most child bad things that happen to kids are at the hands of somebody that they know. So the three things I teach and the Boy Scout teaches and everybody who knows anything about stranger danger versus real danger teach is to recognize, resist, and report. If you teach your kids those three R's, they will be safer. Recognize no one can touch you, wear your bathing suit covers. Resist, run, kick, scream. If somebody's bothering you, don't be nice, just resist. And then report. If somebody does something to you or wants you to do something, even if they say it's a secret, don't tell anyone, somebody will get hurt, tell me, no one will get hurt. That way you're taking away the molester's greatest asset, which is secrecy. Those three R's, recognize, resist, and report, are going to keep kids way safer than stranger danger, because most strangers do not present a danger. Here's another stranger danger tip. If you wanted your child, for some reason, to be kidnapped by a stranger in a what they call a stereotypical kidnapping, like a Law and Order type kidnapping, how long would you have to keep them outside, unattended, for this to be statistically likely to happen?
A million years?
Oh, you're like the only one who says that. You're no fun. No, most people say, I don't know, an hour, 15 minutes. Some people go wild and they say a week. It's actually much closer to a million years. It's 750,000 years. So you win. Here's a lollipop, John. Come get it.
We're told if you see something, say something.
If you see something, say something.
So the reason people are calling 911 when they see a kid outside is because they've been told, if you see something, say something, but they've never been told what something is. And they think that something is anything. A child outside, a kid at the park, a hummingbird. They don't know what they're supposed to report. Nobody defines what something is. And so people don't know when they're supposed to call. I mean, I feel like some people call 911 because they truly think, well, am I supposed to call? I don't want to be a bad citizen. I want to be a good Samaritan. And they don't realize that something should be something serious. And they also don't realize what happens once they call 911, that it doesn't just go into a void. I really think one of the reasons, one of the unsung reasons that we are having all these calls is that we have phones. In the olden days, if you saw a kid walking home from school and you were driving home yourself, you wouldn't remember by the time you got home to, oh, I better call the police. I saw a kid outside, right? But now you have it right there and it's so tempting. You want to be a good Samaritan and see something, say something, and you call. That's when whoever is answering the call should ask some probing questions like, does the kid look okay? You know, is it 3 a.m.? Is there a wild dog chasing them? And if the answer is no, 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 actually, yes, no, no, the kid is okay, then they say, well, thank you very much. I'm glad you care about your neighborhood. Go back to drinking coffee.
But some authorities get very upset about any report of a child being alone. Here, a Texas policeman handcuffs and then arrests this mother because she had her 8-year-old son walk home. It was just half a mile.
The kid is so little, I can see why somebody would think something's wrong here.
Even if the kid looked young, he did not look like he was in distress. He wasn't missing a limb. There wasn't a wolf attached to his leg. I mean, if the kid looks like there's something truly wrong, maybe you should call. But if a kid looks like they're walking home, that does not strike me as reason to call 911.
The caller said he's just ripe for being abducted. And it's true, he was alone.
He's a perfect target for somebody to kidnap.
Officers are on the way.
The perception these days, and it's completely wrong, is that anytime a child is not indoors under the eyes of their parent or on an iPad, they are in danger of being abducted off the street. It is the rarest crime. In terms of reality, it's an extraordinarily, vanishingly rare crime. In terms of Law and Order and any other television show you watch, it's almost every night. And there's a disconnect. People start believing. Your brain works like Google. It takes in all this information. And then when you say, is it okay for a kid to be walking home alone? Up come all these, you know, responses to your mental query. And the ones that go to the top are the most dramatic. And the most dramatic ones are generally from Law and Order or from a Liam Neeson franchise. And you think, wow, Mike, that kid is in terrible danger, because your brain cannot call up the hundreds of millions of children walking home safely day after day, even though that's clearly the reality.
Wait, explain what you mean by a franchise.
So Liam Neeson has had an incredibly great run with the Taken franchise, where he is tracking down traffickers who pick young women up off the street and sell them to Saudi Arabs on yachts. This is a complete fabrication. And in fact, a man named Bruce Schneier came up with the perfect explanation for what we're seeing. It's called the movie plot threat. The more the thing that you're thinking of, the more that the thing that you're afraid of resembles a movie plot, the less likely it is in reality. I saw the clips of this kid, of Heather's kid, walking around the neighborhood. The main problem in that neighborhood, it's boring. There is nothing going on, you know? So it's exciting to see a kid outside. It's like an escaped lemur from the zoo. Look, there's one of them. Aren't I supposed to do something? And you call 911 because you're so unused to seeing a child doing what a child can do, which is be outside by himself, walking home a couple of blocks. This is a good thing for kids to do. Most kids are inside on their phones, on their iPads, or they're being marched off to a game run by adults, often in another state, for travel soccer. So here's a kid able to be outside in the fresh air in his boring neighborhood walking home, and somebody thinks that's so dangerous that they call 911. What's dangerous is that we've come up with a culture, we've created a culture that sees a kid outside and fantasizes not just something bad, but the very worst case scenario. I called it worst first thinking. You come up with the worst case scenario first, you proceed as if it's likely to happen. Guess what? I just saw, what? What did you see? A man with a gun, a tiger? What'd you see? A kid. Well, were they, you know, bleeding? No. Were they crying? No. Were they naked and running from napalm? No. Why are you calling? Because I saw a kid outside. So when you have a culture that thinks that that's normal, and then when you respond as if that call was really going to save a child, you're operating your entire culture on a fantasy that anytime a child leaves the house, if they don't have a security detail with them, and preferably a tank, they are in automatic danger. I know that the cop said, what about a man in a white van?
To have an 8-year-old get out of the car and walk by himself, you know, that's a big problem, okay, because we don't know who's in that white van.
I can tell you that 99.999% repeating of white vans are guys coming to fix your toilet, right, or guys coming to mow your lawn. So the idea that all white vans represent predators and all children outside represent victims is living in a Liam Neeson movie.
The cop means well. He believes it. He spends all his day dealing with problems.
Far be it from me to say I know more than the cops, but I do study the FBI statistics pretty thoroughly, and I put them on my site all the time. It's letgrow.org. So if you go to Let Grow and you click on crime statistics, Here's what it was. 70s, 80s, 90s, crime going up. 93, it peaks. Oh, my God. Then it comes down and down and down. Then it goes up a little during COVID, and now it's back down again. It's at a 50-year low. So if that cop was allowed outside by his loving mom to walk to school, to run a lemonade stand, to go to the store and get a popsicle, there's no reason that Heather should not be allowed to do the same thing. And there's no reason for him to treat her as if she cares less about this child, her own child, than he does.
Not just the cop, it's the legal system. She had to plead guilty and say, oh, thank you for educating me.
Yes. I've tried to parse this out. It is hard to understand. If you've decided to not use reality as your marker for what is dangerous and what is wrong, and you've decided instead to use the fantasy that anytime a child is outside, they are going to be kidnapped by a stranger, and so they should always be with an adult, preferably in a car or the garage or home, then it just goes forth from there. It's like the dominoes. Well, of course she was guilty, and of course we got to arrest her. We have to put her hands behind her back. She's a dangerous criminal. We better send her through the
system. But they don't believe she's a dangerous criminal.
That's what I'm saying. They've decided to use non-reality, this fantasy that she is a dangerous criminal. You don't put somebody's hands behind their back in handcuffs if there's not some part of you that's willing to believe that this woman put her child in danger and is a danger herself. I mean, that's what's so strange to me. It's like you can't pretend like you're living in a hellscape when you're living in the boring suburbs and then proceed as if that's reality. And yet that's what the entire system did, from the caller to the cop to the justice system. Everybody was pretending that this mother had basically thrown her child into the lion pit.
You've gotten laws changed now in 7 states.
8 states.
Tell about it.
So, problem in many states is that the definition of neglect is pretty wide open. It says parents must provide proper supervision or good supervision, but it doesn't get very specific as to what that is, which leaves a lot of room for discretion on the part of the authorities. So I don't want parents abusing or really neglecting their kids, leaving them for a week with no food in a house, you know, filled with syringes. So what we tried to do and what we have done in these 8 states is pass what we call reasonable childhood independence laws. And they say that neglect is when you put your kid in obvious, serious, likely danger, not any time you take your eyes off them. And the great thing about this law is that it protects parents like me who want their kids to free range and be outside, and I trust them. But it also protects people living in poverty, like a mom who has 2 jobs and knows that her kid is going to be okay coming home with a latchkey. So the kid is home alone for a couple hours, or the kid walks home because the mom can't meet her at the bus stop. So that's one reason that it has passed in most states with bipartisan sponsorship. And in 5 states, it passed unanimously. Because right or left, it doesn't matter. You realize you don't want the government telling you when you can let your kids do things because you know their children better than they do.
The media report, 460,000 children go missing every year.
460,000 kids are reported missing every single year.
I can tell you what that number represents. 460,000 children are late for dinner, stayed at school and forgot to tell their mom, stopped to pet a dog, got a candy bar.
So they get reported missing.
They get reported missing. The definition of missing is anybody who has been missing for an hour.
But some groups raise money scaring people.
Yes, they do. You know, fear sells. I mean, that's why I have a harder time on my side. I'm trying to sell non-fear. I'm trying to sell rationality. I'm trying to sell a little gratitude for the fact that we live in times that are so safe. They're not perfectly safe. They weren't perfectly safe when you were growing up or when I was growing up. But back in that time, we could accept the fact that things being 99.9% safe was good enough and didn't mean I had to keep my kid inside all the time.
This parent was in trouble. She let him out of the car.
Mm-hmm.
The statistics show he's actually safer out of the car.
Right, because the number one way kids die in America is as car passengers. It's not as kids walking to school. It's not as kids playing outside. It's not kids falling from trees. It's in cars. And so it's so ironic and kind of sad that we put kids in cars and drive them places without a second thought. You don't see people saying, oh, I could put Johnny in the car, but what if we're T-boned? I wouldn't forgive myself. What if there's a drunk driver? I just won't do it. But people do that when they think about their kid going outside.
It would make more sense to worry about the
car. It would. Cars are my least favorite thing on earth. I moved to New York City, so I barely ever have to drive. Right. The nice thing about the fact that people don't second guess putting their kids in cars and driving them places is because they do have a sense of proportion. They know that it's not perfectly safe, but it is safe enough. But we've lost that sense of proportion when it comes to letting kids go outside.
Parents worried about their kids being kidnapped. Now, maybe they should worry if they let their kids be free that they'll be in trouble.
Well, a couple answers to that. One is that this is a rare thing, thank goodness. I mean, I publicize whenever it happens because it outrages me. But very few parents are arrested because their kids are walking home or climbing a tree. On the other hand, let's change the laws. I mean, let's make sure that simply trusting your kid in the world, knowing that independence is good for your kid, is not considered a crime. And then let's also make it clearer when, if you see something, say something, what that something is. It's not just if you see a child outside, right? It's if you see a child in great distress, if you see a child clearly in need of something, call or help.
Thank you, Lenore Scanese.
Why, thank you, John.
Thank you for watching this longer than usual interview. And if you want to make sure you see more thoughtful discussions like that, subscribe and hit the notification bell.